You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HuntertonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Good afternoon. Can you believe it's already November 6th, and of course the weather out there doesn't seem to be recognizing the fact that it's November. Thank goodness, although this morning started out with some rain and clouds, it really cleared up this afternoon. So what is the weather today and for the weekend? Today was a high of about 75 degrees, can you believe? And tonight there is a chance of showers. And so, you know, that's possibly about 30%. And then it's mostly cloudy, but it'll start clearing up tomorrow, Saturday. Mostly sunny, high of about 60 degrees. And then drops tomorrow night, low of about 38 degrees. So if, in fact, I don't think anyone has any plants outside, and I know the corn is done for the season because of the earlier freeze, but it'll drop down tomorrow night. But then on Sunday, looks like a beautiful sunny day, high of about 57 degrees. So again, get out there. And those of us who are raking or blowing leaves probably have a lot to do because there's still a lot of leaves on the tree, the trees. There's some beautiful areas. I had to go out 78 west a couple of days ago. And although the leaves are fading, really is still pretty, and some of the back roads are a few maple trees that are just unbelievably gorgeous. There's one on Stanton-Lebanon Road between the Round Valley Reservoir and the little town of Stanton that in itself it's worth taking a drive on that road. In any event, Sunday should be sunny, high of about 57 degrees, and then Sunday night it's going to be freezing, down to freezing, however clear. And then again, Monday, it'll be sunny and up to about 58 degrees. So still beautiful weather out there. And I'll be back with It's the Law as soon as we just play a short break from one of our sponsors.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program, no drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormones. hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor-supervised. Visit NJWeightLossGroup.com to schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited-time offer, so call 855-464-THIN. That's 855-464-THIN. Or visit NJWeightLossGroup.com. That's NJWeightLossGroup.com. They can't wait to see you look great.
Good afternoon. It's Friday, a few minutes after 4. I'm your host for the program, It's the Law. My name is Pat Smits, and those of you who know me know that I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County. I limit my practice to family matters, divorce, custody, premarital agreements, anything to do with families other than adoptions. I refer adoptions to a wonderful attorney who really is best suited to handle them, because that's an area of law that most of us who really are family lawyers do not do a lot of. So I always think it's better to have somebody who specializes. In any event, I try not to focus on family law because there's so many other areas of law that I think my listeners are interested in, and certainly not always wanting to hear about family law. So there are a couple things. One of the things I wanted to mention is that if you did not listen to the program last week, that was the 30th of October, Audra Frank was on as my guest, and she's a painting contractor and extremely knowledgeable about painting, gave some really good tips, and a couple people have mentioned again, wanted to hear what she had to say. So if you did not hear the program, I really suggest you tune in. You'll even find out what are some of the best ways to clean mold. And one of the things that I learned is cheap vodka. But we also talked about contracts and what's important when you're thinking of hiring a painting contractor. So let's go on for what are we doing today. Well, there are a couple things. I've had, first of all, I want to thank all of the sponsors at the expo yesterday. If you did not attend the expo, you really missed out. There were some, not only was there good food, but there were really some, our local businesses are showing what they're doing. And frankly, I learned a lot. I found out about a few new businesses that I wasn't aware of. And I think it's a great way for those of us to learn more about our local businesses, because I hope everyone makes an effort to patronize local businesses. I know I certainly do. And they're the backbone of our community. They're the backbone of our chamber. So thanks again. And in fact, a special thanks has to go out to someone that I asked a question yesterday, because I've been trying to find a Blackhawks jersey. And for those of you who don't know, yes, I'm a huge sports fan. And today we're not going to be doing the sports guys, because the sports guys are going to the Devils and Blackhawks game. And of course, I didn't realize it soon enough to go and get something online. And frankly, nobody, I must have spent, an hour on the phone, an hour on the internet, calling every local sports store that handles apparel to try to find something to wear so I could, cheer on my Blackhawks. In any event, I happened to stop at the booth with Crown Trophy yesterday and asked what I considered a stupid question. And guess what? They were able to take one of my shirts and put a great Blackhawks logo on the front, and the name of my favorite all-time favorite player at the Blackhawks and his number on the back. And so we'll talk more about that next week. But anyway, thanks, guys, at Crown Trophy. It really looks great. Too bad this isn't a television, you'd be able to see it. But in any event, what are we talking about today? We're talking about legal issues. And one of the things that, and I'm going to play one spot while I close the door, because I think we're going to have some interference otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Okay, I'm back, Pat Smits, and wanted to talk a little bit about joint accounts because I've had some questions with respect to bank accounts recently, so I think there's still some confusion. And in New Jersey, of course, the ownership of bank accounts during someone's lifetime is governed by statute. In fact, most things seem to be governed by statute. But in any event, what people need to know when they're opening an account is that unless a contrary intent is manifested by the terms of the contract or deposit agreement, now this is with a bank or a savings and loan, or there is other clear and convincing evidence of a different intent, and it has to be at the time the account is created. So the fact that later on somebody might say, oh, I'm going to give you this account when I die, it's going to be yours, I want this for your children's educations, that's not going to help unless there is something that's clear, and it can be putting an account in joint names, putting it in trust, something specific to show that the person who opened the account originally intends on having the account passed to someone when they die. Now, of course, there could be something specific in a will, but that generally is not done. So what do we need to know is that, number one, a joint account belongs during the lifetime of all parties to the parties in proportion to the net contributions by each to the sums on deposit. So if, in fact, someone is able to prove that they deposited 99% into the account, they're entitled to the 99%. However, it's usually difficult to do, and in the absence of proof of net contributions, the account belongs in equal shares to all parties having the present right of withdrawal. So that, and this subsection of the law is not to be construed to affect the right of the court to effectuate an equitable distribution of property between the parties in an action for divorce. In other words, if it's a joint account between a husband and wife, even if one of them deposited 99% or 100% into the account, as far as a judge and a court can divide that account either 50-50 or give the other spouse all of it. And that's why the provision is put in here that as far as people who are married going through a divorce, that account is subject to equitable distribution. And in fact, and I know this is my area of law, but it is important to know that assuming someone gets an inheritance or a gift from a third party, obviously an inheritance is from a third party, but a gift from a third party, and they deposit it. I'm talking about a husband and wife, married couple. Let's assume, for example, the wife receives an inheritance and she deposits it into the joint account. That is considered, anything like that would be considered a gift to the marriage and is subject to equitable distribution. So frankly, parties who get gifts from third parties or inheritances should think about that. I know people do this when they're not thinking about getting divorced. I did years ago, had a situation where my client was a young man, did not have much money on his own, had received a substantial inheritance and put everything into joint names, houses he received, the bank accounts, etc. And so, of course, it was subject to all of the assets that he received by inheritance. They were all subject to equitable distribution, because ordinarily a gift from a third party or an inheritance is not subject to equitable distribution. The initial statute on equitable distribution included all assets, including gifts and inheritances. That was changed very early on after the statute was passed. The initial equitable distribution statute was passed in 1971. So that change was made very early on. There were some very wealthy people in New Jersey who were very concerned that any inheritance that they gave to left to one of their children would in fact be divided with a spouse if there was a divorce, and that did happen early on. But in any event, other than people who are married, the accounts are either equally to all parties having the present right of withdrawal, unless they can, in fact, prove the contributions. So the second type of account that we often hear about is a POD. And that account belongs to the original payee during his or her lifetime, and not to the POD payee or payees. What does POD mean? It means payable on death. So that if two or more parties are named as the original payees during their joint lifetimes, rights as between them are governed by the initial section on joint accounts, meaning there's a section of the law on joint accounts. So during their lifetimes, in other words, not at all unusual for a husband and wife to have an account, and they may have POD to a child or to a grandchild. It means that while both the husband and wife are alive, they're entitled to the account, and they can take all of the money, and it's only whatever may be left in the account that is going to the POD payee or payees. Now, what about a trust account? A trust account belongs beneficially to the trustee during his lifetime. And if two or more parties are named as trustee on the account during their lifetimes, the beneficial rights as between them are again governed just as if it was a joint account. Now, however, if there is an irrevocable trust, the account belongs beneficially to the beneficiary. In other words, an irrevocable trust means that the trustee, the grantor, the person who set up the trust, has no rights once the trust is set up as a irrevocable trust. So that there are reasons, of course, to set up a trust that's not, in other words, a revocable trust or an irrevocable trust. And that's why it's so important, if you're talking anything more than a minimal amount of money, to really have an attorney look at this, plan this. Some estate attorneys, for example, one of the sports guys, John Manfreda, he's my go-to guy on issues such as this, because people need to understand what they're doing. In fact, many people have put accounts, custodial accounts, not recognizing the fact that a custodial account belongs to not to the person who puts the money in the account. Now, the child, when it's set up for a custodial account for a child can't take it out, but in fact the account does belong to that child, so the person who put the money in can't take it out either. So there are a number of situations that come up. If there's ever a question about this, what you really need to do is take a look and get the advice of an attorney. Sometimes there are good people at the banks, and they'll also be able to certainly give you some information. Now, for example, there are issues, and for example, there's some case law. For example, there was a passbook showing a deposit of a savings fund in the name of both a father and a daughter. And that passbook was kept by the daughter in a common receptacle of the household in her mother's room, where the daughter could and did get it whenever she wished. And the family in the case with moderate circumstances and lived together amicably. However, this case did not warrant a holding that the book was not in the daughter's possession sufficiently to indicate a control of the fund as claimed by her. So this is an old case back from 1906. But basically, there are questions about the intent of the depositor, for example. And some of these, this law has been changed. There are, you know, questions if tenancy in common, which means that parties are not married. And so if parties have common savings and loan account, and there's an inherent right to alienate their respective interests. So that there's also a question then, if it's a tenancy in common, whether somebody can pledge their share of the account. But in any case, when people are depositing money with another person, and I don't mean husbands and wives, but in general, you have to really think about the type of account and exactly what is going to happen. Because if there's a deposit in a joint account and the death of the party, then the surviving party is entitled to it. And so if, in fact, someone has a joint account and they have a will that they have a joint account, let's say they have a joint account with their daughter, and then they have a will that leaves everything to all the children. Now, the sums remaining in deposit and the death of that parent belong to the surviving party, in this case the daughter, as against the estate of the decedent, unless there is clear and convincing evidence of a different intention at the time the account is created. Now, generally, that wouldn't happen. If a parent establishes an account with one child, what kind of contrary evidence that would be so clear and convincing to overcome that intention. Now, I suppose if one child is of age and somehow there's contemporaneously the joint account is set up because one of the children are adults and the others are juvenile, I suppose there could be way that intent to make the account benefit of all the children. That could happen, of course, but you'd have to be very careful on how you do that. So this is just something that, again, I've had some questions upon, and you know, there's certainly some presumptions, and the intent, you know, the best intent, the easiest intent to find is the intent the way it is written. So if it's a joint account, that's going to be, you know, that's going to be written as a joint account. And of course, the thing that everybody has to be careful about, if you have a joint account with a child or anyone, the joint, the person that is on the account has the right to take and withdraw the money deposited. So, as I said, other than if there's a divorce pending, and it's part of a divorce, then it would be different, because the court can award 100% of the account to one spouse as part of equitable distribution. So, we'll be back in just a few minutes. I just wanted to play a couple spots, and then we'll talk about some of the other news, legal news.
Mm-hmm.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent. Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site. And we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
Hey, what a great spot. Crown Trophy. I had a great experience there today. I was looking for a Black Hawk jersey, something to go to the game tonight with the sports guys. And I happened to talk to Crown Trophy people yesterday because I'd called all over. And guess what? I am sitting here with this great shirt with the Blackhawk logo on the front and Bobby Hull's number and name on the back, and went over and they did it this afternoon. Great price, great people to work with. So yes, they are certainly more than just trophies. And you know, this shirt is great. And next time, before I think of going online, and of course this time I didn't have time, I will certainly think of them. And I can think of a lot of ways to have some really fun, to have them do something, you know, for the holidays or for anything else, just because they do more than trophies. And by the way, right now you have to go around to the back because they're also renovating their shop. But this is Pat Smits, and you have one satisfied customer at Crown Trophy. And by the way, there's some other great sign people that I've worked with in the area, and but this was just something I needed quickly, and they were able to do it. And of course, other than the fact that one of the guys there is a Denver Broncos fan, that was the only difficult thing, of course, because those of you who know me know that I'm a diehard Packer fan, and that was a terrible loss last week. But anyway, let's get back to the law. And one of the things that people don't understand is that in family law cases, in divorce cases, most cases, I'm not going to say all cases should not be tried, but most cases should not. And we often say that if both parties are not real happy with the settlement, it's a good settlement. But I have an example of both parties being very unhappy with the judge's decision after a full trial. And in the case I'm talking about, both the wife and the husband, the plaintiff and defendant, appealed from a dual judgment of divorce. And so what happened is the plaintiff wife challenged some of the provisions of the judgment concerning limited duration alimony, child support, and equitable distribution. And the defendant husband contended that the trial court erred by awarding excessive alimony and not alternating the tax deduction for the children and not ordering his wife to obtain life insurance and awarding her half the value of his business. So in this case, they both, by the way, also said that the judge incorrectly awarded legal fees. So what happened is they spent a lot of money at trial. At least I'm assuming they had attorneys, because I have not read this the decision as far as who represented them at trial. But certainly on the appeal, although the appellate court affirmed the alimony award, it reversed the child support award and sent the case back to the trial court for further proceedings. It also, the appellate court also reversed and remanded, which means send the case back for further proceedings regarding certain provisions concerning equitable distribution relating to an IRA and a home equity loan and a bonus. So back to the trial court they have to go if they don't resolve these issues. And then the, as far as the provisions of the judgment awarding counsel fees, that was vacated. So what you have is a situation where looks that to me that neither party, well, certainly neither party was happy, and they've spent a long time in, and now they're going to have to go back and kind of do over unless they reach some settlement. So we've all heard about litigation with respect to claims of fraud and with respect to investors and fraud claims. Well, there's one unhappy investor, and he claimed that he was defrauded of $4 million. However, the case was dismissed by a Manhattan Commercial Division judge who said it is, and this is a quote, not the court's role to insulate sophisticated business entities from the consequences of their own risky investments. So I think this is a warning to all. You know, if it's a risky investment and it goes south, don't expect that you're going to get compensated. But that is certainly a warning. And, you know, court did not find that there was fraud based on the fact that this was a sophisticated investor. Now, there is was an interesting criminal case. It's not a reported case, but it was a criminal case. And the situation was the there was a juvenile in the car, high-speed chase, et cetera, and the question was, after the defendant was convicted, there was a question of why the juvenile had not been called. And the case went up on appeal, and the interesting thing there is the appellate court said that it could not conclude based on the trial record that it was not reasonably probable that the result of the trial would have been different if the juvenile had testified that he was the driver of the car. That was the issue. The young man, adult, who was convicted as being the driver of the car after the accident, he said that this juvenile had admitted that he was driving. So in any event, the outcome was the defendant, who had been convicted, presented a case of ineffective assistance by an attorney, and that the appellate division said that could not be resolved without an evidentiary hearing. In other words, the young man had appealed because he said that his attorney failed to interview and call as a witness a juvenile who had told police that he was the driver of the car. And so in this case, as I said, the appellate division reversed and sent it back to the trial court, finding that the judge erred in not conducting an evidentiary hearing. And since there was no evidence to support the judge's finding that the defendant's trial attorney had made a strategic decision not to call the juvenile as a witness, there was a do-over. And of course, the attorney who represented this defendant has some real concerns because at a minimum he should have interviewed the juvenile, and because the juvenile had he testified, the defendant might not have been convicted. So this is always something that you have to really think about, and attorneys have to think about. And in this case, the defendant is getting a second chance because his attorney did not handle it correctly. We often talk about people who, and there are a lot of people here in Hunterdon County who have franchise businesses. I certainly think that anybody who's considering a franchise business, and I've said this before, I've had guests on my program, you really should have an attorney to help you investigate the franchise, look at the agreements that you're going to have to sign, etc. But in any event, this case, and it's Lawn Doctor versus Rizzo, it's a U.S. District Court case, and it arose out of the termination of the party's Lawn Doctor franchise agreement and the Rizzo's purported failure to adhere to the terms of the non-competition agreement that was contained in it. So there are many times where if it's a franchise or any other contract, if you're buying a business, you have to sign a non-compete clause. So in this case, plaintiff Lawn Doctor filed a motion to amend a court's order, and as part of its motion, they requested that the court enter an amended final judgment to include the award of legal fees, attorney's fees it granted in a letter order entered earlier. Now, they filed this motion in March 2014. The earlier final judgment there was a letter back in November of 2013. So there was no opposition filed to the letter, and therefore the court found that the award of attorney's fees and cost was granted in its November 4, 2014 letter order, and found that the exclusion was just inadvertent, and it's the type of mistake that the rules are intended to correct. And so the fact that Lawn Doctor requested the correction does not in any way affect the substantive rights of the defendants, and therefore the court said that they really didn't need to address the rule. However, they amended the March 14th, 2014 letter order to include the earlier awarded attorney fees and costs. And that's the most important thing. You have to really look at these contracts to see what's going to happen if there's a breach. And that's the point of that, as far as, my concern, that's the point and of the breach. So let me come back. I want to talk about a case on creditors and debtors' rights, although that it's not published. I think it's a case that people need to be aware of, and just for your own protection. And what are your rights? What happens? What happens in these cases?
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Okay, and I'm back for a few more minutes. I'm Pat Smits, and the program It's the Law. And I think this case that I'm going to talk about is an example of, you know, what can happen if somebody doesn't do something right. The case is Kamal, K-A-M-A-L, versus J. Crew Group, Inc., and it's a U.S. District Court case. And J. Crew moved to dismiss the class action case, and the case had alleged violations of the Fair and Accurate Credit Transactions Act amendment to the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Now, the court denied the motion, finding that the plaintiff had plausibly pleaded a willful violation of the act. Now, why was it a willful violation? And this is what the defendants did. The plaintiff alleged that the defendants violated the act by printing more than the last five digits of credit card numbers on receipts provided to cardholders at the points of sale. So in other words, I didn't know that they could only, put five digits of your credit card on a receipt. I guess we all should go out there and look. Granted, usually there is. In fact, usually it's just the last four. But this is, in fact, part of the law. So, and in this case, the trial judge said the defendants had actual knowledge of the requirements regarding redacted credit card numbers. And so that they can go ahead with this case. And although, you know, many people think these are very foolish and the only people to benefit, and frankly it is true, the only people to benefit are the attorneys bringing these class action suits. But in any event, go look at your credit card receipts and make sure that that's not happening, because apparently that is part of the law. So there was another, I think, pretty significant for many people. There's a case in the appellate division where the appellate division remanded the case to a trial court, and that was based on a New Jersey Supreme Court recent decision. And what happened in this case is the trial court had dismissed the application for lack of jurisdiction. And the trial court dismissed it because it concerned an immigrant who was over the age of 18. And it had to do with the custody applications seeking special immigrant status. And so that the case stands for the fact that family judges should not dismiss custody applications seeking special immigrant status merely because the person for whom custody is sought is over 18. So these are two recent cases. The Supreme Court decided a case, HSP versus JK. And I don't even have the citation for that yet, because it was a case that came down in 2015 recently. And so the fact is, following the Supreme Court case, the appellate division held that addressing an application filed as a predicate step in seeking special immigrant juvenile status for a person under the age of 21, that family part judges must make the required findings regardless of whether other relief can be granted. So the appellate division also noted that the family court has the same or has some sources of jurisdiction over persons between the ages of 18 and 21, and the trial court's reliance on the definition of juvenile in this case was misplaced. So that situation is the family part is going to be dealing with these cases if there are young adults between the ages of 18 and 21. So for certain people, that really is important. Well, the importance of maintaining automobile insurance is obviously really important, and you know, it's not buyer beware. It's a situation, and this came up in a case I had recently, where my client was unaware that her insurance on her vehicle had been canceled. It's a divorce case. The husband is required by court order to pay for the insurance, and guess what? He didn't, and the insurance lapsed. Now, the third party, of course, the insurance company, they're going to cancel the insurance if premiums are not paid. So in this case, of course, the person who owns the insurance policy is the one who gets the information. Luckily, before there was any true harm done, we were able to catch it, and my client was able to reinstate the insurance. But this is something that, it was very stupid of the husband to do it, because if she'd had an accident, certainly the court would have held him responsible for any damages because she had no idea that he had canceled the insurance. But in any event, the case I was talking about is the casualty company USAA denied coverage for damages to the plaintiff's automobile. And in this case, it was caused by the damage was caused by the plaintiff driving his truck off the road and crashing it into a telephone pole. So the plaintiff in this case appealed the grant of the motion for summary judgment, dismissing his complaint with prejudice. The appellate division affirmed for substantially the same reasons as the trial court, and that is that the plaintiff's arguments were not sufficient to create a genuine issue of fact. And in fact, every document produced confirmed that the insurance company had warned the insured, the plaintiff, that he had to have a photo inspection of the truck. So they were requiring a photo inspection of the truck. And if he did not have the photo inspection, his policy would be canceled. And so the coverage, in fact, was canceled when he didn't produce the photo of his truck, and it clearly indicated that he no longer had collision coverage, and as a result, his premium was substantially reduced. So the appellate division panel added that the plaintiff's view of the insignificance of the photo inspection was misplaced, because from the time he was notified by mail of his obligation to have it completed, he had to, in fact, do it. And he never denied receiving the notification, and the insurance company produced sufficient proof of mailing the notices and receipt of the notice of suspension of coverage. So, you can't blame an insurance company in a case like this. And, not that we like insurance companies, but in this one, they were absolutely right. So we're still in the legal news. There's still issues about Sandy. Although many cases have settled, there's still uncertainty, and other cases have not settled. So we're, that's a problem. Anybody interested in politics, we have John Dean. And if you're old enough to remember Watergate, he was White House counsel for President Nixon from July 1970 until April of 1973, and of course he had been referred to as the master manipulator of the cover-up of Watergate by the FBI. And so he's going to be speaking on Thursday, December 3rd in Newark, and just go online if you're interested and get that information. The Third Circuit, a federal court here, of course, is going to be making a decision in an appeal we call product hopping. And what does that mean? Well, that refers to a practice employed by some brand name pharmaceutical companies. And what they do, the company attempts to shift users from an older prescription drug that is going off patent and will soon face generic competition. And so they try to get them to switch to a newly introduced similar product from the company. So in other words, there is a certain period of time where there cannot be any kind of competition from generic companies. But after a certain period of time, they can compete, and they do, and they have lower cost drugs that are the same or substantially similar. But in any event, what happens is that, I guess we should expect it, that all of a sudden we hear about all of these new drugs coming out, and in fact what the companies, the pharmaceutical companies, are doing is they're touting these new drugs because they know that in a short time the other drugs that they were making a lot of money for are going off patent. So interesting, because some people obviously don't like to take generic drugs, so for them it won't make any difference. But for a majority of people, and now the insurance companies are really pushing it because they require copays, much higher copays, if it's not a generic drug. So there was also a criminal law case about a 55-year sentence, whether that's the functional equivalent of life without parole, and the appellate division in New Jersey said, nope, it's not. And therefore, the federal statute and law that provides a life sentence without parole for juvenile offenders doesn't count in this case. The juvenile offender was sentenced to 55 years in prison for a number of gang rapes, and he's not going to be parole eligible for those 55 years, and it's not the equivalent, according to the appellate division, of life without parole. So one more, and then I'm going to be heading out to go to the Blackhawks and Devils game. And by the way, next week we're going to have a guest on who's going to talk about NASCAR. So with the sports guys, because those of you who listen to us know that on the sports guys that we talk football, we talk basketball, we talk baseball, and even bull riding once in a while, but we don't tend to talk about NASCAR. So I hope you tune in. So the case that I wanted to talk about, again, these are unpublished cases, but they're really very instructive. This was a case against Morristown Memorial Hospital and a number of other people, including the surgeon. But in this case, Mr. Blum received gastric bypass surgery in Morristown Memorial. I guess they're now calling it Morristown Memorial Center. In any event, the surgery was performed by one of the defendants, a co-defendant, Dr. Jean Baptiste. And he was a physician who had staff privileges at the hospital to perform surgeries, but he was not an employee on the hospital's payroll. And what's happened in many hospitals, including Morristown, many of the doctors are now considered employees of the hospital. Changed medicine is changing drastically, so that instead of being doctors who had admitting privileges, they are really now employees in the hospital. But in any event, this this doctor was not. And after his surgery, Mr. Blum experienced significant post-surgical complications. And then he underwent a second and even a third surgery, again, Dr. Jean Baptiste. So, and the fourth emergency, he was, he was in this point in March, he was comatose. And the same doctor informed his sister that he required a fourth emergency surgery to repair his colon. Now, what she did before giving consent on her brother's behalf, thank goodness she did something before she allowed this doctor to perform the further operation, she asked to have a second medical opinion. And that's really important when things are so serious. So although the second opinion concurred for the need of the procedure, and that opinion was provided by the chair of Morristown Memorial's Department of Surgery. However, there also, the sister alleged that Dr. Jean Baptiste was impaired. And so as a result of that, he was asked by the director of operations to submit to an alcohol test. Well, while the result of the alcohol test was still pending, Mr. Bloom's sister consented to further surgery, and that was performed by a different surgeon, although Dr. Jane Baptiste observed it. Now, actually, during the operation itself, you can't make these things up. I mean, this could be a soap opera. But during the operation, the alcohol test results came back positive, and then Dr. Jane Baptiste was immediately terminated. And, of course, in this case, Mr. Bloom is alleging that he's still suffering from post-surgical complications due to the negligence of Dr. Jean Baptiste. He also, we find out, that Dr. Jean Baptiste's malpractice liability insurance had lapsed prior to the surgeries. So in this case, the probability of Mr. Bloom getting compensated by Dr. Jean Baptiste is probably not good because he doesn't have medical malpractice. So in this case, of course, and he would have, but Mr. Bloom also filed a complaint against Morristown Memorial Center, and also then there were some other defendants, and he wouldn't know everybody who was in the operating room. He wouldn't know everyone who might have had something to do with the surgery. So they do a lot of what we call John Doe. They will name the plaintiffs, they will name the defendants they know, but then just list John Doe's. And then what goes on from here is, you know, the whole point is that, you know, who would ever think to ask the doctor to show them their malpractice insurance to make sure they have it? I mean, obviously, none of us would want to go to a doctor if we think they're going to commit malpractice. So it's just about the end of the hour, and instead of going to the news and the sports guys, I'm going to do a rewind, and you can listen to the rewind of the week's programs. I'm off to the Devils and Blackhawks game, and we'll be back next week to talk about sports and the law. Until Friday, next Friday at 4, I'm Pat Smits. Have a great weekend. Weather looks terrific.
You're listening to 100inChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@100in-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy 100in, buy local. Visit www.100inchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Politicians standing with violent criminal illegal aliens.
That's Senator Ted Cruz on the Senate floor pushing for Kate's Law, named in honor of Catherine Steinle, who was murdered in July by a five-time deportee.
And this fight is far from over. That is why I intend to call up Kate's Law for its urgent and immediate passage in the United States Senate.
But 100% approval was needed for the law to pass. Here enters Senator Reid.
The new mandatory minimum sentences bill would create would have a crippling financial effect. This is yet another attack on the immigrant community.
In a Rasmussen poll, 56% support a five-year minimum for an illegal immigrant felon who returns to the U.S. after deportation. I'm Russ Jones.
This is USA Radio News.
Know what's always on my mind, kid? Safety. I live, eat, and breathe safety. When I wake up in the morning, I have a large cup of safety with two sugars and a dash of safety. Safety matters. Your safety, my safety, everybody's safety. That's why I love Grainger. Grainger has the products, services, and resources to help keep our facility safe and our people safer. Now pass me one of those safety donuts over there. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Dr. Ben Carson is responding to charges that he made up stories about his violent past growing up. The Republican presidential candidate told Fox News' The Kelly Files that the person he claims to have tried to stab as a youth doesn't want to be identified.